I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and you are listening to Boston Public Radio. It's a pretty common scene. You're in a park, and you see a mother pleading with her son. Now, it is a bit strange to see it happen at 10 o'clock at night, and it's even more unusual when it happens in front of a crowd of about 8,000 people, and it sounds like this.
There's no man in the world more bound to his mother. Yet here he lets me prate like one in the stocks. Thou hast never in thy life shown thy dear mother any courtesy.
Yikes. Well, if Volumnia sounds a little bit hysterical there, it's with good reason. Her son, the mighty general Coriolanus, is hell-bent on destroying Rome, and she is trying to stop him. Now, if you haven't guessed it by now, we are talking Shakespeare here, and for the 17th straight summer, the words of the bard are echoing through the summer night for thousands of people on Boston Common, and that's thanks to the efforts of Steve Mailer and his Commonwealth Shakespeare Company. This year, Steve is doing something a little bit different. Instead of presenting a tried-and-true crowd-pleaser like Othello or Taming of the Shrew, he's decided to go with a little-known, politically-charged historical tragedy, Coriolanus. It seems like an odd choice, and maybe even a risky one, but it's one that's made for a reason, perhaps more accurately for a number of reasons. And here with me now to discuss that is Steve Mailer, the artistic director of Commonwealth Shakespeare Company, also directed this particular play. Steve, thanks for being with me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
I'm also in the studio with Nick Carrière, who's the star, the title role of Coriolanus. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Thank you both for being with me. Steve, I want to start with you about this choice of a play. Shakespeare on the Common is something that for a lot of people, it's sort of summertime rolls around, maybe it hits their consciousness. Oh, I'm going to go down to Shakespeare on the Common. Let me see what they're doing this year. What is it going to be? Othello, Taming of the Shrew? And then it's like, Coriolanus. Interesting. I didn't even know that was a play. So first of all, maybe you could tell us a little bit about Coriolanus. Give us a sense of what the play is.
Sure. Well, Coriolanus is one of the great tragedies of Shakespeare's. It's it's so topical and timely, and I think we'll get to this as we get further into discussion, but it's really about a great military leader, a ferocious and powerful military leader, whose mother, the extraordinary Karen MacDonald that you just heard, has ambitions for political office for him. So she wants him to shift from being a military leader to being a political leader. And this is the fundamental failure of the play, is that he's incapable of doing that. And he's incapable of doing that because he's incapable of flattery. He's incapable of the double talk that politicians are so routinely demanded to do. He can't go in front of the Dunkin' Donuts and shake hands with the people. He despises that. Yet he's an incredibly fierce warrior for the country, and an essential part of their military infrastructure. So when they revolt, the people revolt and actually have him banished, they've cast out the one person that can save their country from the enemies of Rome that are sort of marauding at the edges of the city-state. So it's a very topical and fascinating play about the relationship, the sort of mercurial, quixotic relationship between the people and the governors, the governed and the governors. It's an interesting study about leadership and what skill sets are required to be a powerful leader, and how you can be a powerful leader in some aspects of your life, whether you're a business leader or a military leader, and terrible in other aspects of your life. And that's, I think, what's so wonderfully human about this play and about this character, is that you see him for all of his glory and all of his incredible strengths, but you also see him for all of his terrible weaknesses.
It's interesting that you keep using the word timely for a play that was written, 1607 or something like that, about 5th century BC, right? I mean, that's the time. So how is it that it's timely?
Well, it's interesting. You know, this sort of the cliche about Shakespeare's, we all say, oh, it feels so relevant today.
Yeah.
But this play actually feels literally ripped from the headlines.
Yeah.
There are speeches in there that feel like, trickle-down economics, for example. There are moments that in the staging, obviously, the staging that we've developed for the production is a very contemporary and modern aesthetic. It looks like now. It looks like it could be Syria. It could be an American military aesthetic. So we wanted to bring the play, crashing forward to here to really draw those contemporary resonances that are so obvious and apparent in the play.
Yeah. Nick, were you familiar with this work when you sort of first came to it?
I was a little bit. I did my graduate degree at Yale School of Drama, and when I was there, I worked on the play a little bit as part of an independent project outside of a production. So I was familiar with the role and the story of the character, but I'd never worked on an actual production of it. So I knew a little bit of it coming in.
I don't think any of us have in the company. Yeah. I don't think there's a single person in the production who's ever done it before. It's
really
a very rarely performed piece.
I mean, I certainly had never seen it until I saw it this week.
And I've never seen a production of it.
And talking with people that I know, even people who are pretty, Shakespeare fans, casual Shakespeare fans, a lot of them haven't even heard of it. So how did you make this choice, Steve? Or how do you make the choice just in general to which play you're going to do in this big central event of your season?
Yes, well, obviously the Shakespeare on the Common is, as you say, the sort of the centerpiece of Commonwealth Shakespeare Company. We do a lot of other things during the year. We have a robust education program, a fantastic partnership with the Boys and Girls Club. But this is the centerpiece. And for me, I get really excited about theater becoming the sort of locus for civic engagement and civic discussion. And I thought that there was really no play in the canon that was as apt to the time that we're in right now as this play. And I knew it was a stretch. I knew it was a challenge. We had done last summer All's Well That Ends Well, which is also a play that's it's not one of the sort of Shakespeare's greatest hits, a beautiful, astonishingly wonderful play, and had had great success with that and found that our audiences were actually very interested in seeing something other than Romeo and Juliet and Midsummer Night's Dream, which are, of course, glorious plays, and we'll do those again at some point. But it's interesting to we've developed now over the 17 years a fan base that wants to be challenged. They want to come and see something that they haven't seen. And I felt like this play really spoke to our time. I was in about a year ago. I was in Amman, Jordan, doing some Shakespeare workshops with the University of Jordan, and I think that was really where I decided that this was a play for us to look at very, very soon, because there was so much, an air of newness and of revolution and of overturning. Toppling, dictatorships, and that again, that just very electrifying relationship between established power structures and the people who are represented by those structures. And I think, to a certain extent, not as resonant personally for me, but certainly a parallel would be the Tea Party movement and the Occupy Wall Street movement, where there's a sense of lack of representation, that the voices aren't being heard. And that tension, I think, is very much in the air. And obviously, as we go into an election cycle, these are issues that are critical to the future of our country for the next 4 years as we determine how we govern ourselves. And I think it's a very interesting play. It's very nonpartisan, of course. Shakespeare, if anything, he was more sided towards the establishment. He was actually writing, of course, during a monarchy, so he's not going to be careful about how he manages his politics. It's interesting because it really just surfaces so many interesting issues.
What was the mood like among the cast as this was coming together? Was there this sense as you dug into this play a little bit more, as the cast dug into it, as you kind of got your teeth into the characters, that this was resonating in a particular way for our time?
I think so. I think people weren't I think people were unsure of what to think as the process was unfolding, and it really wasn't until as we moved to the Common that we became aware that what we were dealing with was something really very powerful. I think because it's such a large play and such a dense play, there was some uneasiness about what is this thing we're creating, and it began to evolve. And at one point, right before we moved to the Common, we did a run through, and became very clear that this was, in fact, there was something both very resonant in terms of social issues and today, but also very powerful emotionally and resonant in terms of human relationships, mothers, sons, people governed, etc. And it just became aware over the course of a couple of days, and it was really exciting, actually.
Yeah. So I'm talking with Nick Carrière. He's the actor who's playing Coriolanus, the title character in Coriolanus. That's Shakespeare on the Common's play this year. I'm also here with Steve Mailer, who's the artistic director of Commonwealth Shakespeare Company. Nick, there's a lot of this play on your shoulders as the title character. Both from a physical standpoint, it seems it's a physically demanding role. I've seen it. I mean, it's action packed, and I should say that. I mean, you said you brought into the modern era. You're hearing machine guns firing. You're seeing fights going on. You're seeing things sort of exploding. I mean, it's like an action movie at points. You literally look like John McClane from Die Hard at points in this movie.
That's good.
But there's this physical demand, but there's also. You're going through this sort of transformation from this sort of great military leader to this to this sort of consumed with anger, potentially political leader, outcast, consumed. How do you deal with the pressure of all of this kind of on your shoulders as an actor, as a play, and carrying us through that?
I try not to think about it because I get weighed down by it. But all I can really do is focus on what I'm saying and doing in that very moment. Because honestly, if I think ahead, I'll become overwhelmed by the size of it all. It is incredibly physically demanding. It's very vocally demanding. It's been a real challenge to not have my voice break down over the course of 7 weeks doing this show.
Well, you got a microphone here, nice close, so you can hopefully we're not straining you.
No, it's great. It's just like anything. It's work, and you have to use a level of technique to get you through the work, both physically, emotionally, and even intellectually, because there are some large arguments to think through. So it's about pacing and technique to make sure to know where you're going, but to not get overwhelmed by the goal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is it hard to find the character? Is it different to find a character in a Shakespeare production maybe than it is in another production?
I actually think it's easier to find character in Shakespeare because a lot of the burden of developing character is completely taken away from you because ultimately you're never going to be smarter than Shakespeare is.
Right.
So anything you ever need, and teachers and a lot of colleagues have always said this, that anything you ever need to know about a character is right there on the page. Mm-hmm. The words tell you when you move, when you gesture, it tells you your thoughts, what you're thinking. It tells you about the world around you. So a lot of that, modern acting technique in terms of character development is you don't even need to think about it because the words do everything for you. I mean, they're the most miraculous words ever written for the stage, I think. So everything you need is right there in terms of character.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Words, Shakespeare, obviously a master of words, and words pretty much the thing that moves the political day forward. I'm curious, Steve, do you see Coriolanus, do you see Volumnia, do you see these characters today on today's political stage?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, what's so miraculous about Shakespeare and why 400 years later we still, appreciate and enthralled by these plays is he was writing about humanity. And what's so amazing about Shakespeare is he creates these vast political landscapes, but yet those are landscapes filled with living, breathing, fallible human beings. And his investigation into sort of the human condition is what makes him continue to surprise us and astonish us. And every time we come to one of these plays, we discover more in it because we've evolved as people. You read Hamlet when you're 20, you read Hamlet when you're 40.
Yeah.
It's a different experience because you're a different person and the play hasn't changed. The play is just has the same richness and depth, but your ability, quite frankly, to understand it and process it has changed. And I think that, in what's so wonderful to me about what we do and why we do it is that these plays are very, very difficult to comprehend the scope and scale of them on the page. Plays are very difficult to read in general. Shakespeare plays are even more difficult to read. And they're not meant to be read. They're a blueprint. They're not the building. And so to be able to present this play every night to 8,000 people, some of whom have perhaps read the play and seen a production of it, but most of them haven't, is so exciting to see it embodied by these extraordinary actors and with this extraordinary design team and this complement of 85 people that work every year to make this production happen.
How you're sort of getting into that the scope of this production, and it's evident when you go down there. I mean, the stage is beautiful and interesting. There's lights, the sound is incredible. How the heck do you keep this thing free?
Well, it's a lot of work. Our goal with the company is to make the experience that the audience is having on the common parallel to a Broadway show, parallel to the top, to the American Repertory Theater, the Huntington Theater. It has to be artistically excellent. That is goal one and gating factor one. Because if this is the very first experience of someone seeing a play, which for many people it is, or very first time they've ever seen a Shakespeare play, I want it to be an experience that just changes them, that realigns their understanding about theater and Shakespeare and the power of our medium that we spend so much time and working on. So we are hell-bent on making it excellent, and we're blessed with, you know, extraordinary artists and technicians and actors and designers who help make that happen. But I think the first time people come out there, their expectations are very different than what we give them. We give them so much more than they think they're going to get. Every year our audience grows because of that, because once we get them out there, we know we've got them. In terms of the making it free, you know, our annual budget is actually relatively inexpensive compared to what we do. We spend about $700,000 every year. About half of that is on the physical production that you see on the Boston Common. The rest of it is for our overhead and for our education programs. But if you think about that, we serve 100,000 people roughly on the Common. That's $7 a person. Yeah. You can't even go to a movie for $7 a person.
Barely get a cup of coffee for $7.
That's absolutely right.
Anymore.
And, you know, we are always on the quest to bring new sponsors and new supporters to the table to help make this free for the next, you know, million patrons. We've actually had our millionth patron on the Common this summer, and that's a wonderful milestone for us, but we're focused on the next million.
Yeah. Nick, what's this experience been like for you? You're from here.
I am. I'm from West Bridgewater, Massachusetts. Yeah.
But you live in New York now?
I do, yeah.
And this is your first time doing Shakespeare on the Common?
It is. I grew up in my teens and 20s. I've seen some shows on Boston Common, and I always thought, I want to work there someday.
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be so exciting to come home and do it? This is really the first time I've worked in Boston. And being from here, it's honestly miraculous to come home and to be in a city that I love, and I have so much family and friends who are still in the area.
Yeah.
And to be part of this community, it's really exciting.
What's it like to be outside doing this kind of in the night air? Is it different?
It's new. I've never worked outside before. So it's taken for me a little adjusting to all the things that are coming at you. Sirens, helicopters, dogs, skateboards. You know, there was a skateboard going up the path last night during a very quiet scene. And I, you know, of course, there's this rage that's filling up inside of me because I'm like, could you just get off your skateboard?
But you can use the rage with your character.
Exactly. So it helps to be playing this character when people are doing loud things during quiet moments. But, you know, it's an interesting challenge, and it's very humbling because you can't control anything. And so it actually makes the work a lot more fun and exciting because you just got to do it.
Real quick.
But don't you think, too, that the scale and scope of Shakespeare sort of embraces the outdoor,
absolutely,
embraces the sort of epicness of the Common?
It's built for an outdoor space.
Real quick, before I let you guys go, generally, we've been talking so much about this. Political, it's heavy, it's dense. How's the audience reaction been, generally?
Spectacular.
Amazing.
Yeah.
People are listening so intently, and we've got them somehow. It's really wonderful.
There are, you know, a few moments of humor in the play, and
sure,
you always hear the audience respond to that. And then there's this glorious standing ovation of 8,000 people standing on the Boston Common at the end of the performance every night.
It's quite a scene. I've seen
nothing
it myself.
Nothing quite like that.
And you still have five chances, is that right, to see
four,
Nicholas
and Narsik
has four chances. It's going to happen tonight. It runs through Sunday. We've got details on our website, WGBHnews.org. And hey, if you go, I want to hear what you have to say about it. You can tweet me at intermission at EBHerwick3. Steve, Nicholas, thanks so much for being with me today.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Nick, break a leg tonight.
Thanks so much.
All right, there's Callie Crossley back here in Studio 3.
Hi, Edgar. I'm going to play some Ella Fitzgerald to set up our next conversation.
Hey.
Every time we say goodbye, die a little.
Oh, that is nice. That is nice. I got a feeling that if I had to take a guess, we're going to talk about goodbyes. It's either goodbyes or Ella Fitzgerald. So.
Not Ella. That's right. It's goodbyes, exits, moving on. Yeah. My guest, Sarah Lawrence Lightfoot, joins us to talk about how the small goodbyes we say every day are preparing us for those bigger exits that we need to deal with.
All right. Well, I'm going to exit the studio. Get out of your way so that you can get on with the segment.
And you're Edgar B. Herwick III.
That's right,
I am. Callie Crossley, and you're listening to Boston Public Radio.
Allow you to go when you're near. There's such an end.